Since 2005, Blue Hat has been where the security research community and Microsoft come together as peers.
To debate and discuss, share and challenge, celebrate and learn.
On the Blue Hat podcast, join me, Nick Fillingham.
And me, Wendy Zanoni, for conversations with researchers, responders and industry leaders, both inside and outside of Microsoft.
Working to secure the planet's technology and create a safer world for all.
And now, on with the Blue Hat podcast.
Welcome to another very special video episode of the Blue Hat podcast. In celebration of International Women's Day and Women's History Month, we have two wonderful guests for you today. Thank you so much for being here, for this topic, for being on camera, for being in video, to Tina Zhang Pao and to Tara Joyce. Thank you both for joining us. Obviously, thank you, Wendy, as well. We'll kick off with a quick intro. Tina, if you could introduce yourself to our audience, please, and then Tara will have you jump in afterwards.
All right. Hi, my name is Tina Zhang Pao, and I am part of the VRR Vulnerability Resolution and Response Team at Microsoft. And yeah, I'm very glad to be here.
Thank you. And Tara?
Hi, everyone. I'm Tara Joyce. I lead the M365 Penetration Testing Team, which is the team that focuses on offensive security to protect M365 products at Microsoft.
Awesome. Now, both of you would have eventually ended up on the Blue Hat podcast anyway, but we thought we would accelerate that invitation and accelerate that reason to get you on as part of this this special episode to celebrate Women's History Month, International Women's Day, and to talk about what it's like being a woman in security, in cybersecurity, a woman in tech. Obviously, well, maybe visually, I am not one, but hopefully I can ask some simple questions and represent allies as part of this conversation. Tara, we might start with you. Love to learn about maybe a little bit more about what you do day to day, but then also your path here and how you got into cybersecurity and found yourself working in this particular role at Microsoft. Tina, we'll get you to give that same story as well, but Tara, if we could start with you, that'd be great.
Yeah, of course. So I'll dive into my journey first. So a lot of women in tech don't have as many visible role models in tech in order to look up to. But I was lucky enough to have my mom, who was an engineer my whole life and was really an advocate for me to dive into STEM and to dive into tech to really explore those interests. So from an early age into high school, I was learning about computer science and learning about the opportunities that it might provide. And then in college, I got the opportunity to do an internship focused on security, and I just got the bug. I loved it from that and was really interested. So when I got the offer to join Microsoft out of college, it wasn't in security. It was in user experience in Outlook, and it was focusing on accessibility for low vision users. So making sure that people of all walks of life could read their email and join a professional setting and hold jobs like you and I. So I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed getting to be close to the user, but I was really itching to get back into security. So I cold pinged someone after a coffee chat that was a manager in security, and I started getting coffee with person A, who introduced me to person B, and then later on, I knew probably 10 or 15 people within Microsoft, and I was just itching to find a role that was really focused on that. That's what introduced me to offensive security and a role within the penetration testing team, and that's how I transitioned into the role that I'm in today, or to be on the team that I'm on today. And then a few years ago, I transitioned to be the manager of that team, which was both exciting to kind of expand that charter as well as meet a career goal. So just step-by-step, really influential advocates, allies, and sponsors throughout my career highlighted opportunities that were available and encouraged me to take those chances.
I love it. I love that you're a principal. Story. Yeah, I love that you're a principal too. I love seeing women role in principal roles at Microsoft. It's great. Congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
So, Tina, I think it's sort of fair to say that maybe your path into cybersecurity slightly less perhaps orthodox if we think of Tara coming through more of a linear path, especially with, you know, the family support and STEM and having the familiar role models. You came through historical graphics? No. What?
Scientific illustration.
So, somehow that became historical graphics in my head. I'm so sorry. Tell us your story, how you got to here.
Yeah, so I grew up, was not very deep into the tech world. I liked art. I did art since I was 10 years old and all through high school, and basically decided I'm going to go to art school. And then, of course, we all hear the term of starving artists. My mom's like, there is no way that you're going to go to school for art. And she basically sat me down and said, I don't think your art is good enough to make a living, honey. Like, this is what Asian parents will look you in the face and tell you straight up, right? And then, of course, the 18-year-old me is like, I will be here to prove you wrong. The compromise was I had to go to a good school, which I went to University of Michigan. And the compromise was that a school that had an art program at the same time and everything else, right? The school itself offered just about everything you can imagine. It's actually one of the two schools in the entire country offered a major for scientific illustration, which the thing is, all through high school, like, I was really good at the STEM and the science and the math part, right? In college, since I was an art major, I didn't actually have to take any math classes because I did all of it, all the required college math in high school, right? So I had the free reign to do a lot more art things that I wanted, right? And of course, after college, it is, you know, my mom was correct. It's very difficult to actually find a job as a scientific illustration. But at the same time, the compromise was also I had to do graphic design, which is a lot more reasonable as someone who learned art, try to find a job out there. Right. So after college, I actually worked for a Japanese fashion company that did what they called was designed in Japan, but made in China. So all the factories were in China, but they actually did all their fashion design in Japan. So I actually did a lot of traveling, did a lot of fashion photography and fashion cataloging, like, right, completely different from what I do now. And it's really weird, right, when people actually then ask me later on, how do I transfer those skills, right? How did I even get here? Well, we'll get to there. But after all the art bids, eventually we moved to the Seattle area because my husband then boyfriend found a job for Warner Brothers, for Warner Brothers Games. And we were missing the piece that's a more stable job, right? That had the insurance, the 401k, like the normal. You can take a vacation and not worry about what you're going to, you know, if you're going to have a paycheck next month. Because for me, it was all freelance, a lot of traveling. You didn't eat if you didn't work. So I was looking for something more stable. And I kind of got in touch just hanging out with a lot of these gamers and the game testing just organization and people. And eventually I got a job there because, right, like, while I didn't really have the tech background, I was really good at learning all of it. And I started doing network certification for Warner Brothers console games. And then after that, eventually I moved to a more of a live ops role into a Korean MMO company. And then after that, did a lot of mobile games. So yeah, I was in actually games for almost 8 years. And then after that, it was just me hanging out with some friends, and then they were all talking about cybersecurity things. I'm like, that sounds really interesting. Like, you mean this just happened, right? Like, a lot of the things seems like really intriguing and surprising to me, because we were talking about how there are classes that will teach you all these cybersecurity concepts and, you know, how to hack a website and stuff. And then they're like, but you don't even have to do it by hand. There's a tool for that. I'm like, what? It's scary, but awakening moment for me. And that's kind of got me interested and into this whole thing. And then at the time, I was definitely looking for a career change from gaming to something else. And cybersecurity kind of just fell into my lap almost. And then eventually I became a vendor for Microsoft for triage security vulnerability reports. And then after that, I applied for the full-time job. And, you know, almost 6 years later, here I'm actually almost just a little over 6 years later, and here I am.
I love this. Yeah, I have to admit, as a parent, I've given the same talk to our kids. Like, y'all can't be musicians. You need to get a normal job. You know, I mean, that's...
Tina, I just want to say, like, at the risk of like opening a familial wound here, was your mum sort of saying like, it's really tough to make a great living doing scientific illustrations, or was she saying,
don't do it?
your drawings aren't very good.
Well, so I would.
Don't answer that question drama at Thanksgiving.
No, well, she knows exactly. That's not what the goal of this podcast. We had this conversation many times afterwards, right? It's like, you really, yeah, we had the conversation. I'm like, you looked me in the face and told me I wasn't good enough, right? Like, she knows. So it's fine. Me and my mom actually had a great relationship. We talk about some of these things all the time, right? Like, she's like, you know, I wasn't doing it. Like, she was like, it was an honest opinion because she went with me. Like, art school, you don't just apply and get in. You have to apply. And most of art school actually require a in-person interview. Where you actually have to show them your stuff. And then, you know, most of the time there will be multiple people interviewing at the same time, right? So my mom got to see some of other people's things. And then she literally told me, like, from the other stuff that she saw, mine wasn't as good. So, yeah.
Well, I'm, in some bizarre way, I'm glad your mother did have that conversation with you, because otherwise you wouldn't be a part of the MSRC team and adding all this incredible value and being with here on the podcast today. Although, you know, I do like to think that in some parallel universe, you are off there doing your scientific illustrations, which for some reason became historical graphics in my head. But we'll put that to rest. I'm sorry. This is not about revisiting, you know, awkward family conversations.
Therapy on the Blue Hat podcast. Well, I'm happy that you both are here. I've heard about both of you. Luckily, Tara and I have been communicating on a side project. So I've had the pleasure of being able to I've actually learned a lot just from like our brief conversations. And Tina, I've seen videos of you presenting and I've heard about you many times. So I'm excited we're able to connect here. And Tara, I just wanted to ask you about, so you went down the more traditional path. You had an engineering mother and then you had many things that you've done, but I want to ask about your internship in the Air Force. What did you do?
Yeah, so I had a couple internships that were supporting the Air Force Research Labs, starting actually when I was in high school. There were some opportunities for like teenagers to kind of get that taste of different STEM opportunities. But from that internship on, for several years afterwards, I worked in various Air Force Research Lab projects supporting a couple of their missions and really got to see some interesting application of technology in that space. The first project I ever worked on was GPS system or navigation systems when GPS couldn't work. So things like dense tree coverage or city landscapes where maybe you're blocking the GPS signal. How can you have a drone or something else navigate in that space? And then the project I worked on for the last few summers for the Air Force was how to help pilots for remotely piloted aircraft manage stress. So these are folks that are flying drones that are halfway around the world. And a lot of the time, it's a very boring flight. And you're just kind of playing a video game that's going straight. And then the other small portion of the time, it's incredibly high stress. And they need to be able to load balance as appropriate. So we were trying to kind of combine psychology and computer science in that regard to determine when they were stressed and load balance when we could in order to keep everyone safe and effective at their role.
Were you the only female in the program?
In the first case, yes. In the second case, no. That was one of the only experiences that I had where I was not the only woman on the team. And until recently at Microsoft, I haven't had that many women on my team throughout my career.
It's a common thing. We are noticing this. I mean, obviously, you don't have to look closely to notice.
Yeah, I've actually recently, so as I transitioned to the manager role, I kind of stepped into a lot of those security leadership conversations. And I went from having my teammates in the room that were women or having my peers that were women as individual contributors. And then when I stepped into that management room, I was back again as the only person in the room that was identifying as female. And it was kind of like culture shock again all over of like readapting into that space of kind of being alone or kind of dealing with those feelings of imposter syndrome or representing an entire community and working through that again. But it always shocks me when I talk to some of my male coworkers and they don't even realize that I'm the only woman in some meetings. I once talked about there's women mentoring circles, especially within the security community at Microsoft. And I told my coworkers, like, allies are more than welcome. And one vocalized, like, wow, it'd be interesting to be the only man in a meeting. And I was like, that's like every stand up for me, every team meeting for me. And he was like, oh, you're the only woman on the team. And this was at my first role at Microsoft. I think I had been on the team for 2 years at that point and had been the only woman on the team for the entire 2 years. So it was just kind of comical. It's like he genuinely did not realize my lived experience, which I think is sometimes helpful for allies to be in that situation.
Right. Right. And sometimes it takes pointing it out, because if you're not in an underrepresented group, you probably just, you're going about your day. You don't even think about it, as you said. So it's maybe not intentionally that they're not paying attention to that, but it's, once it's pointed out, it's like, okay, put a little different perspective on that. And, yeah. And Tina, have you noticed yourself as one of the only female in many meetings, or have you noticed more women over time joining? What has your experience been like?
Yeah, I think my team definitely started with there's more males on the team, but when I joined the team, I only had like 13 people. But now my team is, you know, a big team now. We have almost over 30 people now, and we're hiring more. And at the same time, we start to be a lot more diverse. It's definitely noticeable that there's a lot more women now. And it's kind of interesting, right, when we also, like, in the Redmond campus, it's also a very diverse campus. And you notice there's a lot of women around you when you're just walking around campus. And then when you go to conferences in Seattle, or you, right? And then the funny thing, the weird shock that I had was when I went to a conference last year that was in the Midwest. And for the first time in a few years, again, I was one of the very few female in hundreds of male participants at a conference. And it was for a second, I realized, I'm like, oh, this is the Midwest, right? Like, it's not in the Redmond campus anymore. It's not in like Vegas for Black Hat. And it's all of a sudden in a more remote, smaller city of Midwest. And then the security conference, I intentionally looked around. There were two Asian people. and it was very, you know, why male dominated when you just look around. It was like the first time, that was the first time I went to a conference in the Midwest for security, and all of a sudden I was reminded almost of like how few women there actually are in this field.
Yeah, I think there are certain cities that are probably more progressive than others. And as you said, as you migrate away from those cities, I could see the contrast being very noticeable.
I'd love to ask a follow-up, Tara. You talked about looking around the room, first of all, as an IC and seeing other women, and then when you stepped into that management role, look around the room and you know, you're the one of either the only woman or one of very few. And then the comment that you mentioned that you gave of that your peers being all male and not realizing that you were the only woman there. And so I wondered if I could ask a sort of a rudimentary question in the interest of sort of allyship and sort of better understanding here. What would you want to happen in that situation, either proactively or reactively? So, like, what should men do, you know, especially if they are in management roles and they look around and they find out that there's, you know, not only are they in the majority, but there might be only one woman in the room, or only one person of color, or only one Asian person, or, you know, realizing that there is someone in an underrepresented group around them. What should they do if you have a perspective on that? And then I also wanted to ask, you know, in the interest of sort of like glass half full, is it a positive sign in some ways that your colleagues didn't necessarily notice you were a woman, in the sense that, you know, the whole trope, like, oh, I don't see gender, oh, I don't see color, you know, that's in that sort of sense, like, do you feel that was actually almost a positive sense in some ways, that you were just being treated as an equal? Or was it a miss because you are a different person, you do have different needs, and therefore, you know, in the interest of allyship, people need to do more and think differently? I guess that's one very, very big question, but I'll let you go wherever you want with
that. So to get into the second portion first, I think it's a little bit of both. Like, obviously, we all want to be respected as individuals. And them looking at me for my technical abilities and what I contribute to the team outside of identifying as female is what I want to bring to the table. But if we don't look around and notice when certain populations are underrepresented, we're not going to have diverse perspectives building our products, which means we're going to have misses when it comes to building for our customers, securing our customers. So especially in leadership roles, and that specific example happened years ago when I was an individual contributor. So I haven't had that happen as a leader in my org, but I do think it's a miss for leaders to not realize when we don't have that representation because, as you mentioned, for kind of next steps on how they could handle it, they're handling who's hiring, they're handling who is sitting at the table. And that's something they should be thinking with regards to retention and hiring of what perspectives are we missing here and how can we make sure that they have a seat at the table and have a voice that can be heard. You also kind of asked how they could help in the moment to an underrepresented individual in us or underrepresented community or that individual in a conversation. And I think that you can only, you'd have to talk to that individual, obviously, to see how they could best get help. But for me, I really appreciate when my colleagues ensure that there is space in the conversation for me to vocalize my opinion, especially when I am the subject matter expert. Sometimes people will not look to me like I am the lead of the team that I lead. They'll go to somebody else in my organization. And I really appreciate when they throw that ball back to me or loop me into that conversation so that I can vocalize my perspective or share my expertise. But some people, if you threw them on the spot like that, would be very uncomfortable. So it's not a one-size-fits-all solution for everybody in those circumstances. But I know from my perspective, that's been incredibly beneficial for me to be able to share my thoughts and participate in conversations that I should be part of.
And just a quick follow-up on that. Again, you know, hopeful sort of guidance for allies, you know, Should I say, if I'm in that situation, should I say, oh, Tara, you're the only woman in the room. You're the only person that identifies as female. Could you give us your perspective? Or should that not be verbalized? That should just be a sort of a silent checklist going through, you know, who's in the room? Do we have good representation? Where might we have underrepresentation? And let's just make sure that the underrepresented people get an opportunity to speak versus actually verbalizing that. Do you have thoughts on one
or
the other?
My subjective take is that I don't always love when people verbalize that. It kind of makes me feel like I'm being called out or kind of like the spotlight is thrown on me for something other than the skills that I'm in my role to highlight. The cases where I think that has been really applicable, though, are if I am in an interview loop and I'm the only woman on the call and something might have happened that is related to gender in that case. Or if we were talking about my experience as a woman, throwing the ball to me to share that firsthand experience in that context makes sense. But if it's outside of that context, I much prefer to lean into the other qualifications that me and my colleagues have.
I'll just add to this a little bit. I think if you all agree that sometimes we want certain actions. We want to be included. We want people to stand up. We want people to be allies. But I have noticed that, you know, it's kind of like, Tara, you mentioned that folks did not realize you were the only woman, you know, because it's just not something they're thought of. So I think also gently, you know, educating folks on this, you know, like letting them know, like, hey, could you do this? You know, in your case, you know, I'd appreciate if you come to me, this is my team, instead of going to the other person, because they might not even notice that they are being biased without even being aware of it. So I do like, you know, that kind of a hard conversation to have. It's an awkward conversation, but it does help because it's the, you know, the awareness of like, oh man, I didn't even think about that. And when it comes to like asking you to be, you know, both of you on this podcast, there's two sides to this. It's like you're on here because you're both amazing people and you do amazing things for Microsoft, but you're also on here because you're identifying as women. And I know some people can be sensitive to that. Like, I don't want to be asked to do things just because I am a woman, but there's also the other side of it that you also need to be to, you know, to start that conversation and be the one on this podcast to say, hey, there are things we need to think about. Tina, have you experienced anything on your end where you maybe you noticed there is some, aside from being the only female in the Midwest at a conference, is there anything that you've experienced in this vein?
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. Because for me, when I joined the Microsoft team and MSRC, it was a pretty diverse team. Yes, it was, you know, men heavy, but as the team grew, it was definitely a very well balanced team. I think we're one of the, I feel like, more balanced team for diversity and inclusion wise. But it's also weird that once in a while I kind of just forget, right? being a minority, and because we're also much more conscious about it in Microsoft, just the org in general. We talk about it, right? We have all these goals and we're very conscious about it. And then it kind of become our everyday life. And we just kind of know these things and then kind of act almost appropriately because we are in this environment. And I know I kept on bringing up the conference at Midwest because all of a sudden I was reminded that not everyone have that same opportunity to live in a supportive environment like we do here. And honestly, I was very happy that I was able to go to that conference and actually present there as well, right? Just to almost show the people out there that there are women that can be on stage presenting the topic that are typically men heavy, right? Especially tech. And that's actually very interesting. It was definitely a great experience. And I think more of us should get out there and talk about the things that we do very well, right? And just the thing is, I think sometimes women just don't have that confidence to even go out there to talk about the great things that we can do. And I think more of us should definitely get out and do that.
I agree. I'm also a chicken, so I understand the lack of confidence part. In tech, it's hard too. Tech is difficult, and then security is even more difficult. Everyone's got a very strong opinion, and it can be scary. So, I mean, I know you both have presented, so I give you big thumbs up on that, because that is, it's a hard thing to do. I've done it a few times and I swear I think I'm going to die right before I get on stage.
It's terrifying. And honestly, I think like being a woman in tech and in cybersecurity is one of the main reasons I have presented, because I almost feel like pressure obligation to go into visible roles so that other people do have role models or at least a visible somebody on the stage in front of them, showing them that somebody looking like them can present or can do this work. Because not everyone had those role models growing up.
And speaking of presenting, this is the Blue Hat Podcast. You both have presented at Blue Hat. We'd love to hear about what you both presented on. Tina, if you want to go first, we'd love to hear about what you spoke to the audience about.
Oh, yeah. Last year, I was doing a co-presentation with someone from the CERP team, which is the incident response team. And we kind of talked about the cloud incident response, basically how Microsoft does it, right? what do I do? Like, how did my team handle a case? And when something is an actual security response, how do we press that giant red button that triggers the entire cloud incident response cycle, right? So, and that's kind of what we presented on, which was very interesting because we presented on the internal day, and then to a lot of the internal team, when there's a major response, they get all these emails, all these meeting invites, but they don't actually see how it got there, right? Which kind of that's what the presentation really helped was to actually tell people, you know, just because you got looped in on one major incident, there are hundreds of reports every day that got filtered through that may not become a major security incident, and hopefully in the future, you know, how do you actually handle them when they do knock on your door with one of the major incidents?
Tara?
Yeah, so I did a presentation with one of my colleagues called Purple Perspectives. And the purple in this case is when blue team and red team meet. So blue team is focused on defensive and responding to security incidents. And I lead the red team. So I focus on creating those security incidents or being an attacker internal to Microsoft. So our presentation was walking through an attack. So we were walking through an attack about how the Outlook client, you could create rules at the time. The security risk has been long patched. But you could create rules that would run a application on that machine. So if you could get access to someone's inbox, you could create a rule and run code on their machine, which is a huge security risk. So we would walk through how to do that in a workshop setting so that the individuals in that workshop got to actually execute on an attack end-to-end. And then my colleague would show them how they could look for the security signals and how they would go about investigating and responding to an attack of that nature. So it kind of mixed the red perspective and the blue perspective, and that's why we named it Purple Perspectives, on what an attack looked like end-to-end, full picture from both angles.
Both are really interesting. Thank you. Do you feel as nervous at Blue Hat as you do at other conferences, you know, because it's home, it's you know, familiar, or is it across the board presenting nervous?
Well, I think it's definitely slightly better, right? Because at least you know this is the building, and you know where the bathroom is, and you know where where the food is, and you know where things are. But like, is that nervousness right before is your turn and you're just like lurking on the side waiting for the last person to finish and you're like, okay, it's my turn, and you're getting a mic and you're just trying to just be relaxed as you can. It's funny. And then my watch is like, hey, your heart rate's going up. Are you okay?
No, I'm not okay.
But you know, this is when I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have to take some deep breath. But it's definitely better to do it at Blue Hat. Just because it is a much more familiar environment compared to others.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then you also had some friendly...
Go ahead, please.
I was going to say I completely agree. And then I also had some friendly faces in the audience, which really made things nice.
Yes, yes.
Which Blue Hat conference did you present at, Tara?
Good question. 2019, I believe. Yes,
in Seattle?
In Seattle.
Right. And the team you presented in October,
it was October
or
last year.
In February? October. Got it. I would love to revisit a question we had earlier or sort of a thread we were on just a few minutes ago. Again, speaking to allies, thinking of allyship, and I want to come back to this sort of idea of sort of unconscious bias. And, you know, if we assume that colleagues have the best of intentions, and when they do when they do things where they, you know, they don't ask you the question or they don't look around the room, it's due to unconscious biases or as opposed to something else. What kind of assumptions, Tara, I'll start with you, do you think that people make in cybersecurity when there is maybe only one person that identifies as a woman in the room or two, and how can we help them better better be aware of these assumptions and to potentially sort of check them? So for example, like do you find, or did you ever find, that your colleagues assumed that you only had expertise in a very specific subset of your domain and not sort of a more broader depth? Or what kind of things did you encounter, if at all, that we could help folks understand and sort of be more aware of in aid of allyship?
Yeah, I think the most jarring example is when folks thought I was like a PM because I was the only woman in the org. But those are really few and far between. Like most of the time, folks really do look at the person presenting on something or the person talking to them about something and recognize that no matter what they look like, their technical expertise speaks for itself. But I completely agree with your perspective on assuming good intent and that it's largely unconscious bias with that leads to some of these behaviors. But unfortunately, even if one person makes one mistake, when it's a small population of folks that are underrepresented, they're getting everybody's one mistake occurring against them, which can add up to more. So I think it really, the biggest thing I would say is that allies can also recognize when that small unconscious bias happens, and have that conversation to let that person know, like, hey, I know this wasn't a causation, but the correlation here was X, Y, or Z. And you can make a change in the future so that that doesn't happen again. Or, you know, just so you know, you might not have realized that this is the case instead of that, and kind of help them course correct, because everybody makes mistakes. We're all human. But when people are in underrepresented populations, they have to deal with every person's one mistake. And it can be taxing to be the one correcting it every time.
Have you had incidences sort of recently, or, you know, I'll say opportunities to have those conversations with folks and sort of, you know, maybe point out where they were acting on an unconscious bias?
Yeah, I've had those conversations with close peers and partner teams, and I will really give a shout out to my allies who have had those conversations as well on my behalf.
Awesome. And then Tina, your perspective too, you know, some, again, are there assumptions that folks make about you simply because you're a woman that are made because of these unconscious biases that we want to help them maybe understand?
Yeah, it's actually kind of interesting because I'm a woman and at the same time I'm Asian, right? Like, some people have the assumptions about Asians and then there's the ones about women, and we combine them together and once in a while you're like, that's a little weird. So which side am I? So I actually went to, I don't know if any of you were here in 2000, I think it was 2019 when the diversity inclusion training was in person. Where they actually put on a whole skit and a show, and then we talk about different situations, and you break into groups to talk with people that you've never met before, basically, that work at Microsoft during this training. And it was actually very interesting to actually talk to a lot of the people that don't even realize the unconscious bias bit that even existed, right? And that training really brought it out to them, and all of a sudden, everybody's like, wow, I really have to kind of look around and think about what I'm about to say and make sure that what I say is appropriate and make sure everyone is actually included in the conversation. Just when you do a presentation, right? So it's like, instead of, you know, you guys talk to, you know, when you group of people together, all of a sudden, like, are you talking about, like, you're not consciously saying everybody is a man in the situation, but that's just kind of the word that we're very much used to talk about a group of people. So it's very interesting, a lot of these things that we didn't think of all of a sudden now came out, and it's really up to the individual to actually learn and remember these things. And next time you are in a setting where, you know, you, like Tara, when you are the only female in the room, to make sure that whenever we were talking about, everyone is represented and, you know, the opinions do actually get listened to. And, you know, it's hard, but I think just having that in your mind every time you're talking to someone, right? It doesn't even have to be a meeting where there's multiple people. Even if it's just a one-on-one situation, sometimes it still applies, because you don't know like that person's background or what they have that you might not see on the surface.
I also think how we respond to some of those things is really important. I mean, we don't need to be angry with pitchforks and saying, you know, yelling. You know, I've been in a situation where I've had to travel to Redmond. Then someone asked, my husband also works at Microsoft. It's like, oh, you travel for work. Is that is it because your husband's job? And it's like, no, it's my job. So it's finding ways to respond in a way that's polite and, you know, but also educational. So I think there's we all have roles in this. And I don't think being angry and, you know, because I've seen that side too, where people are very angry about it. And I don't think that solves anything. So I like, you know, hearing, you know, how we've been handling these types of things. And I know that, Terry, you mentioned, I think you mentioned something about mentorship programs within Microsoft for women or any other external. Do either of you have any resources or ways that people can support other women in cybersecurity that you're aware of that you can tell us about here? Tara, I'll let you start.
Yeah, so the resources I was describing were internal to Microsoft. So there's women's mentoring circles, both from a software engineering perspective on product teams, and then I know there's specific ones for women in security, which is obviously a subfield that is even a little bit less represented by female or by women. But externally, there's also a lot of great conferences that are primarily female participation or are dedicated to making sure that there's equal representation, at least. And I've gone to several of those, and they're a great place to present for the first time. If you're a woman in tech, they're a great place to go and be in a more comfortable, safe space if that would lean into your learning environment better. So there are some great communities out there to both share your research as well as build a community of peers.
Awesome. Tina, do you have any resources that you have either worked with or know of that you could tell us about?
Yeah, actually, interestingly enough, I'm actually the committee lead for Women in DSR's mentoring group. So if you are a woman in DSR, there is actually going to be a mentoring program coming out very shortly, sometimes in mid-March. So if you're actually actively looking for a mentor or you would like to be a mentor, let me know. But we already had a survey sending out recruiting for mentors, and we actually got quite a good amount of responses. So we'll actually be pairing up mentor mentees and at the same time creating some mentor rings as well. So if you are part of the Women in DSR org, I definitely encourage you to participate. And then on top of that, just like Tara said, right, the very first, well, I guess one of the first conference where I actually had to travel for presentation was Diana Initiative in Las Vegas last year. And honestly, that environment was the most supportive presentation environment I've ever experienced, to the point that it was almost a little weird that they were so supportive. They do like presentation review. They will even do like run-throughs, and then they will actually help you like tweak your deck and try to like and help you with your content. Right, there are multiple rounds of submission. If you didn't make it the first one, they will have a mentor for you to help you so you can submit again to see if you make it in the second time. Like, it was a very supportive environment. So, you know, if you are new to the presentation world and you want to get out there just to show the world we are here and, you know, we need more, I feel like that's definitely a good one to start. And then the blue hat that I presented with, right, that was a great experience just because, you know, it is local. It is, it's a very, very safe environment, right? And people are not afraid to say, you can't say this, or we're not supposed to say this part, and like very like hands-on, and which I actually really liked, because sometimes people kind of dance around the topic a little bit of, am I supposed to say this? Can I say this out loud, right? And, you know, Blue Hat's very much make sure all the content are valuable and presented in a certain way that's good for everybody.
And you mentioned DSR. For those listening, that is an internal org within Microsoft. Tina, do you want to let us know what DSR is?
Yeah. Now I have to think about what DSR is.
Digital Security and Resilience, I believe.
That's why I was putting it on you. I'm like, can you tell?
Yeah, yeah. Let me... And resilience, yeah. And I'm like, what is the R? The R changed because it used to, 5 years ago, it used to call DSRE, which is digital resilience and something in engineering, like, right? But now we dropped the E and now it's called DSR, which is digital security and resilience. So there you go.
And I'll add one more resource. It's WISP org, Women in Security and Privacy. They have a tandem program. So you fill out a form and you talk about where what it is that you can offer. Either you're at a higher level and you have a lot of experience, or you don't have any experience, and they'll partner you, you know, with someone that is matches what you're looking for. So if you are new into the industry, and I'm smiling because I when I first started my career in security, I did I did apply, and I got matched with the only other woman in security at my company. I think this was a long time ago, so the pool is much broader now, but that we both applied, and we both got matched together, but it was great because we worked well together. But it's a, I loved it because I was new, and I was looking for someone that had more experience that could guide me in the realm of, that was AppSec at the time. So I encourage folks to check that out, WISP.org.
Well, we are coming up on time. Just as we sort of start to wrap it up here, Tara, if I could ask you, you know, again, with my ally hat on and on behalf of the hopeful allies listening to the podcast, quick summary, if you would, wouldn't mind, on like, what is your ask, or what is your guidance, or what are your things you would like to say to allies, and what you'd like them to do or just think about maybe a little bit differently?
Yeah. So I really encourage allies to just keep looking around the room and look for the folks whose voices aren't being heard, whether they look like you or don't look like you, and in whatever format you think would be the most comfortable for them or for you, reach out to them offline or ping them on the side, throw the ball to them in the meeting, and just make sure everybody's voices are being heard. If we don't allow everyone to speak, we're never going to grow from those perspectives, and we really need everybody's perspectives in order to solve these incredibly hard problems that we're trying to solve in cybersecurity.
Amazing. Thank you. And Tina, guidance to allies?
Yeah. Actually, I really agree with what Tara said. To make sure, just look around the room every time you're in a meeting, or look around your screen. So since we're all virtual now, I know like most people don't turn on their camera often when in meetings. And sometimes sometimes I personally feel like if we're not always on camera, I'm very much guilty of that. That are you sure that person's perspective is being heard and being taken into consideration when we're making decisions? And one thing I do is on the side is I ping them individually offline to make sure that even though they weren't on camera, they weren't speaking out in the meetings, but they are still part of the conversation and still part of the decision. And as an ally, it's all about recognizing when something like that happens and make sure that we take that extra step to make sure everyone is included. Maybe they truly didn't have anything else and they were happy at where they were, and that's fine too. But it's about recognizing it and recognizing there's someone different that may not have been heard, and making sure that their opinion did get included in whatever we were doing.
You're so spot on too, that hybrid meetings make it so challenging. sometimes to make sure everyone's heard, like we have like a policy on my team to try to set the meeting format before you go into the meeting on, are we raising hands or are we jumping off mute? Are we using the chat or are we not using the chat? Because everyone kind of leans into a different format, and somebody might be sitting there with their virtual hand just raised, and the presenter might not even see it. And they're not trying to ignore them. But if you can kind of set an expectation or a standard, at least everyone can snap to the same thing then and be all speaking on the same field.
And I might just add too, you know, as an hopefully an ally and, you know, a potential ally, if a Tara, a Tina, someone does ping you and say like, hey, you know, I noticed that you didn't, you know, if someone calls you on your behavior, you know, take it as a learning opportunity. Try not to be defensive and angry, and really, you know, see it for the beauty in that gesture of, you know, two humans, you know, reaching out in the effort for better inclusion and better accessibility and people sort of seeing each other. You know, I think that's one of the things that I try and do as hopefully an ally, is that if I do get called up on an unconscious bias or some sort of behavior, or when I say folks instead of meaning people, I do take it personally because that's just what the ego does, but I try very hard to not do that outwardly. And I think that's a big challenge for a lot of people, but that's one way you can be an ally, is to just take that feedback and think on it and hopefully, you know, make minor changes to your behavior.
We are wrapping up and we are short on time. Thank you for that, Nick. Before we go, do either of you have anything coming up? Are you speaking at any conferences? Do you have any place, you know, where people can reach out if they have any questions or not? You know, some people don't do the social media thing. You know, you both are extremely busy. I know this. So that's one more area to manage. But is there anything coming up that you would like to share here?
Tara, go first? Or
yeah, let's go first, Tara.
Nothing major coming up on my end, but I'm always available on LinkedIn. If folks want to reach out, I'd love to connect and to meet new folks around the industry and hear what you're working on as well.
Awesome. Tina?
Yeah, I'm applying to a few different conferences. I'm just not sure if, it's a application season right now for most of the conferences. So, and I'm also always available on LinkedIn, and my team is always hiring. So, you know, I actually get a lot of just good conversations going in LinkedIn. So if you have questions and want to reach out, that's a good place. And I really don't do any other social media besides that. And the one last thing I really want to make sure that everyone here is, you know, like sometimes people, like especially women, are afraid to get into the tech and the security world just because they didn't have the background. And my background is so far away from what I do today versus even, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It's so different. And just don't be afraid. If it interests you, just, you know, try it. And there's no fault in just trying it. And then maybe you actually do find your calling eventually. And honestly, the best thing art school taught me is to how to give people feedback, how to provide actionable feedback that are actually valuable. And that's what an art school taught me working in cybersecurity.
That's awesome. Well, thank you both. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you both have really packed schedules. So I appreciate you being here, giving your perspective. And thank you so much. And thank you so much
for having us.
Yes. Yeah. It's been great. I'm glad to have had this conversation and get to talk to you both. And Nick, I always love talking to you.
Oh, thank you.
But thank you to our listeners. And thanks for joining the Blue Hat Podcast. We'll see you all next time. Thank you for joining us for the Blue Hat Podcast.
If you have feedback, topic requests, or questions about this episode,
please email us at bluehat@microsoft.com or message us on Twitter at @MSFTBlueHat.
Be sure to subscribe for more conversations and insights from security researchers and responders across the industry
by visiting bluehatpodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.